Welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast series by Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm Giuseppe Porcaro, and today we will speak about skills-based hiring. This episode is part of our series about skills in the frame of Bruegel Research Project on the Future of Work and the European Year of Skills 2023. I'm happy to welcome Mona Mourchette, who is the founding CEO of Generation, a global nonprofit network that supports people to achieve economic mobility so they can change their lives. Hi, Mona. Welcome to The Sound of Economics.
Thanks so much. Delighted to be here.
And I'm also happy to have with me Dugu Gunnar, who is our fellow leading the Future Work and Inclusive Growth Project and working on skills. Hi, Dugu.
Hi, Giuseppe. Thank you for having us.
So going into the core of the topic, we've been seeing in the past years after the pandemic that we had a new height in the unemployment rate and remote work, which has been normalized, and many of those kind of changes. And we entered in a period of reevaluation of work, and we've been seeing phenomena like the Great Resignation. We've been seeing a big switch of jobs in unprecedentedly high rates, and somehow disconnect between, you know, employee demand for remote work and employers offering fewer remote opportunities, and these kind of things that we've been discussing also in our other episodes related to the future work discussion. And one of the big topic is that a lot has been said on possibly a lot of missed opportunities where incredible candidates are not getting matched to the positions that could positively impact the companies, the economy, and society. And it seems to me that in order to minimize these missed opportunities and focus on building a deep understanding of people's potential, we collectively need to shift our mindset so that we hire based on skills and learning and not solely on the degree or job title. And that's what we are going to explore in this episode. So before delving into skills-based hiring, Dugu, could you elaborate on the significance of this topic and what prompts this discussion in the first place?
Sure. Let me quickly summarize what we wanted to have Mona today and discuss why we care about skills-based hiring. I think it is no-brainer that we are experiencing a huge skill mismatch and skills shortages in the EU labor market. This is, of course, a global problem, but in EU, it has a significant importance in the policy agenda. And we see that despite highest employment rates and low unemployment rates, we see the record high job vacancy rates in EU. Currently, 2.9 jobs are vacant, while 10 years ago, it was around 1.3. And in some sectors, the rate of vacancies which are not filled by the labor force is almost tripled. In some others, it is doubled. So this is an emerging issue. It has been a problem for more than a decade, but now it come to a rate that it is no longer sustainable. So first of all, the reason we care about skills-based hiring is that it can provide a solution to this increasing problem. But also, one of the importance comes from our demographic base in EU. Our current hiring practices places too much importance on degrees, while majority of the workforce don't really have a degree. So when you check the educational attainment numbers, you will see that only 20% of the population aged 25 years and older has a tertiary degree. And low-educated people, a quarter of the workforce, and they are more than 50 million people. So obviously, if we keep hiring based on degrees, as the content of jobs are changing to more sophisticated ways with the digital transformation, we will be excluding more and more these low-educated people. So skills-based hiring would also might be the solution to have a more inclusive labor force. And finally, why we should be caring more about finding the right skills. For the time being, the problem is already huge enough that a lot of policy interventions are planned across this dimension. But also for the future, for the ongoing evolvement of our societies, the skill gap creates a blockage. Because when we check the technology adoption data across industries, across countries, we always see different components of technology. The main reason that companies cannot adopt new technologies like AI, like cloud computing, or big data technologies is the lack of proper human resources. They cannot adopt these technologies because they don't have the people who can use those technologies. So in the sense, while it is already a problem, it also hinders the future development of the digital transformation in our economy. So this is more or less why we care more about skills and why skills-based hiring can be a new solution to a long existing problem.
So Mona, I guess that you've been quite stimulated by what Dugo just said, because this is bread and butter of your daily work, right?
Indeed. There's a reality that there are many people in the world who face structural barriers to employment. That is everything from poverty to education opportunity, and just the ability to search and find jobs in the labor market. And so through Generation, which is the organization I lead globally, we very much do focus on how do we train and place people into new careers that would otherwise be beyond their reach. And to date, now we have 90,000 graduates across 17 countries, several of which are in the EU. And they work across 40 professions. And we have about 12,000 employers. And for them, the reason why they hire from us is because it expands the pool of applicants that they can interview and hire, but only if they're willing to suspend the past work experience, the education requirements, and instead hire them based on what they are able to demonstrate as their skills competency. And so that can make a real sea change in terms of both the pool of talent for employers and certainly for opportunities for learners such as ours.
From your experience, then, this has implications for different groups of workers, because, I mean, going from the global pool that we have, like I'm thinking that workers of different genders, level of education, age, but even geographical location might change the way this can be done. And you might give us a little bit more of an overview of that.
Yeah, so first of all, we focus only on entry-level roles and for each of our professions. And so typically, what's most critical is, let's just take tech roles as an example, since we were just speaking about digital jobs in particular. So certifications that are industry relevant, you know, so whether you have an AWS or a Microsoft or a Google certification that are relevant for a specific profession, that is a very important signal. Much more important, actually, than whether you have a 2-year degree or a 4-year degree or you don't have a degree at all. You know, so that is about, can you actually, you know, do you have mastery of this particular technology or this particular solution? Employers will also engage in actual tech-based assessments or technical assessments that can also be conducted remotely for candidates anywhere in the world, as well as for candidates who live down the street. That is the direction of travel. But what I'll also say is, you know, we recently did research across 8 countries where we also understood what are the barriers that employers are facing as they're hiring for their entry-level roles in tech. And so we surveyed thousands of employers, thousands of job seekers. And what we found is that over half of employers today say that they struggle, even in this day, that they struggle to fill their entry-level tech roles. So something has to change. And skills-based hiring is an important way to do that. Now, that is not to say by any stretch that all employers are moving in this direction, but it is a direction that I think is becoming increasingly inevitable.
Dugo, do you want to comment on that?
few things I have to say on that. First of all, the entry-level jobs are not really entry-level jobs. So they even, I think I cannot give exact numbers, but I remember something like 1/3 of entry-level jobs require at least 1 year of experience, while new graduates don't have it. So basically, the things that needs to be changed in terms of how we hire people. So another thing I want to say is that already we see that this shift in hiring mentality, we see in the data. I think it was in 2022 that almost half of the people who hired through LinkedIn started to use more skills than degrees. And this was significantly higher than its level in 2021. I think as the need for finding the right people urges, people are shifting and being more open to new practices. It's the same for employees. Employees also started to use more and more listing the skills in their profiles to signal that they have the right capabilities that employers are looking for.
And let me build on that. For example, in our survey, we found that 94% of entry-level tech roles require past work experience. 94%. And this is across 8 countries. So there is a reality that, you know, it is very hard to get started if you can't ever get started in your job, right? So how are you possibly supposed to get this work experience? Same thing with education degree requirements. You know, so the vast majority of employers still do have education degree requirements in terms of you need to have a 4-year bachelor's with STEM background and so on. And one of the things we found in our survey is we asked, okay, over the last 3 years, has there been a shift, right? Because the skills-based hiring dialogue, I think, has particularly come to the fore over the last 3 to 5 years. And what we found was that the majority of employers have actually increased their education requirements and work experience requirements over the last 3 years. So they're in many ways moving in the wrong direction. But we did find 25% of companies who removed education and work experience requirements. And the really great news is not only did they increase their pool of applicants, but those that they hired through that process, 84% of companies said that they performed as well, if not better, than peers hired the traditional way. So there are clearly still a set of challenges and awareness that we need to grapple with, but those companies that are jumping on the skills-based hiring are finding that they are able to achieve better on-the-job performance outcomes, or at least equivalent on-the-job performance outcomes.
Let me understand something. It's very interesting what you're saying, that there is an increase of hiring or call for applications that don't require specific level of education. How exactly does it look on the paper? You know, like this is something that we are so used to see, you know, level of education as some of the requirements. So what this is actually replaced with, because we are used to skills and competences to be present in the job description, but, you know, we are not so used to the other part being removed. So how exactly it looks like?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, we are hiring for XYZ role. This person must have XYZ technical skills, these types of behavioral and mindset skills. If there's a relevant certification, like industry relevant certification, like Microsoft Excel, whatever it is, that's what it states. But it does not state you need to have a 4-year degree or a 2-year degree.
Can I be provocative over there? You just mentioned that, and you mentioned it before as well, that industry level certifications might be more important than those. Isn't there a risk to somehow slip into some view of corporate-based approach on the hiring, especially while licenses for these products are specific of a certain company and not the others, and companies might be changed their software or whatever they're using from one company to another across the years. Isn't there also a risk of this kind of industry certification requirements that is similar to the one of the educational level, but is even more ingrained into discriminating people because they're really like linked to a specific brand rather than an establishment which might be a public education establishment which provides, I don't know, skills on coding or whatever.
So it's important to differentiate what a certification signals, right? So first of all, any industry relevant certification is about your ability to use a particular technology tool. There are people who will have multiple certifications to say that for this, you know, that they can use Microsoft, Google, AWS, you name it, right? That is the first thing. The second thing is it's very difficult to compare and to say it's equivalent, that the investment required for a four-year degree is the same thing as a certification that you can obtain within months. You know, they are very different things. These are not equivalent, but it's the question of what do you need for the role in order to perform the tasks of the role. And so the way that hiring is happening, I mean, I think there's also a reality. There are many employers who have different projects. They use different technologies. They will need people for each of those technologies who can use those tools. And so this is more a function of the evolution of just business overall, and then certifications then keeping pace with that.
Jugu?
I don't think I really agree with you on that. I understand your concern, but we have to find a way to signal employers that these people have legitimate skills. And this goes like, if this can be through private businesses where they have accredited systems which can signal people having a given skill, or it could be also civil society who, like Generation, although Generation does not really provide any certification, but its name and its program is sort of a signal that their graduates, their learners have this skill required by the employers. So I think, although it is not like formal education system, I think non-formal ways of education provides a better opportunity for a wider group of the society. Formal education is most of the time a privilege for many people, especially people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds. But thanks to the civil society organizations, many people have access to these trainings outside the formal education institutions. So in that sense, I don't think there is a risk, but it is something we should be promoting more and making them more acknowledged in the industry so that they have more power to attract people to their trainings as well.
Indeed. And I think this is a very good point about recognizing non-formal education skills, which cannot be seen from diplomas sometimes. So I wonder if you have, because here in Europe, we've been having experience over the past few decades about kind of measure or quantify the skills that are acquired in non-formal education. It's still an ongoing process. Being this the European Year of Skills as well, it's a very important point to highlight. Have you been working in those kind of frameworks at Generation in order to allow the employers which are willing to switch to this new system of skill-based hiring to assess the skills and to help on the other side the job seekers to be able to explain how they acquired certain skills outside the formal education system?
So whenever we offer a new profession, we begin by doing something we call activity mapping, which is we go and we spend time with our employers to understand what are the daily activities that someone in this role has to perform. And so there might be 20, 30 activities that you do every day in your role. And then we understand, okay, well, what are the technical skills, behavioral skills, and mindsets that you need to perform each of these roles well? And in particular, we spend time on those activities where you see a real difference in terms of how a high performer performs those activities relative to a lower performer, to really understand, well, what is it that they do? And so that then becomes the basis of the curriculum that we then create. And then we obviously then share that with our employers. And often it's quite a surprise. It's like, you know, I hadn't really thought about the daily work in this way. And so that's part of the journey that we're on. lawyers. And then we obviously then support our learners to achieve mastery of those skills to perform those activities.
So it is a learning process on both sides.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. That's quite mind shifting in the way you actually plan the recruitment of people and your way of doing that. You mentioned the tech sector as you've been more working specifically on that. Maybe it's a good opportunity to zoom in and make a concrete example about this. And with Generation, you've launched a global survey on entry level tech talent. And if I remember correctly, you included quite a lot of job seekers, like 2,600 or something like this, and a few thousand, like 1,275 job holders already in tech roles, and employers as well in tech and non-tech, right? What has been your key takeaway of that, and what kind of lessons other sectors could learn from this operation that you made?
Yeah, I mean, let me just begin by saying, like, why did we decide to focus on tech? Because we have programs across customer service, healthcare, green jobs, skill trades, and tech. And for tech, what we see is, because typically the wage levels are higher than they are at the starting level, they're typically higher than they are for other professions, it creates significant durability when it comes to what happens to our graduates 2 to 5 years later. You know, so we see 2 to 5 years later, 86% of them continue to be employed, you know, nearly 70% are saving for the future. So that wage increment is a big deal for learners such as ours and whom we serve. So we also, though, noticed that it can take longer to get our learner profile hired into tech roles. So it could take 6 months to get to an 80% plus job placement rate versus in other professions, we can get there in 3 months. So we wanted to understand, okay, how can we accelerate the representation of underrepresented communities into tech roles? So we found a couple of things. I mean, one, which I just mentioned, over the last 3 years, employers have actually raised education and work experience requirements. So on some level, you know, the entry-level job has in many ways disappeared because 94% of jobs require past work experience. So that is one. Two, though, is that we did find that for those employers that have removed the education and work experience requirements and replaced them with tech demonstration assessments or tech interviews, certifications as well, that they are not only getting more applicants, but 84% of those companies say that those that they hired through those methods are performing as well on the job as those hired the traditional manner. So then we look deeper at certifications, and what we found is that they have an important leveling effect when it comes to both ethnicity and to degree background. So if you have these certifications, then irrespective of whether you have a secondary school degree or a vocational degree or a university degree, you are equally likely to be interviewed, which is great news because that's ultimately what we want. We want to be able to have more equitable access to opportunity. We unfortunately did not find the same on gender. So what we found on gender is that men with certifications perform best through the interview funnel. So what I mean by that, from application to interview to offer. Women without certifications performed worst through that funnel. What we did not expect to find is that men without certifications performed better than women with certifications through the funnel. And in particular, the drop-off happens at the interview to offer stage of the hiring process. Mm-hmm. And so that there are all kinds of questions that raises, which we are beginning to delve more deeply into. And part of it could be like hires like. Part of it could be other dynamics, but we're very keen to now work with a set of employers to take the recommendations coming out of the research and to work with a set of companies to implement them in their own hiring practices and to then track the data to see what actually changes and what actually happens in terms of whom they recruit and who stays on the job and their performance.
Diogo, you were nodding about the fact that this is raising a lot of questions, so I'm looking at you.
Actually, when I was looking at Generations report, that was the saddest part for me, seeing that although skills-based hiring was able to level out the playing field for people with minority backgrounds, but not to women, that was a bit sad to recognize, because I already mentioned there is a similar report by LinkedIn. They are using their existing data, of course. It's not a designed research particularly for this purpose. There they are arguing that it is going to improve also the employment opportunities for women. But then when you see, I think that comes from the sectoral differences, because your survey, it's only focused on tech companies, and we know STEM is more gender biased. So I think there is more internalized gender differences happening there that we cannot even overcome, even if we are being pressed by severe need for more people with the adequate skills. But going back to LinkedIn reports there, you see it shows that skills-based hiring can actually increase the employment in other sectors as well. The first one being education. It argues that the talent pool in education is expanded by 22% by when we switch to skills-based hiring practices. And that alone explains why LinkedIn finds a more gender-balanced impact on average, but on contrary, Generation basically spotlights to this continuing gender discrimination in tech industries, basically. So,
well, it's for tech roles broadly, because in our sample, we had companies that are tech and non-tech, mm-hmm. right? You know, and so, you know, you could be a bank hiring for tech roles. Okay. And so it's across sectors. I think we had about 16 sectors, but it's, you know, that was one of the most distressing findings of the report. And we are very much committed to being able to now dig several layers deeper in order to understand what is the root cause and what can be done to equalize opportunity across genders.
Well, if gender is one of the big topic, the other one which you've been working on is definitely youth and the fact that youth unemployment is still like it has been a very serious issue in the European Union, at least since the global financial crisis, if not from before, and has only gotten worse with the recession. And we've spoken about how the skills approach can benefit to enlarge this pool. So maybe we can say something about how do you see this to help young people to access the labor market?
Yeah, absolutely. So first and foremost, when you look at youth, often, you know, and to be clear, you know, so we take the ILO definition of ages 18 to 29. So there are multiple challenges that they're facing in the labor market. So one is past work experience. You know, so when you are 18, you may not have past work experience. And so it's very hard to be able to get your start. Second is that, you know, even if you do get a start, then it can often be sort of odd jobs here and there. And so it's very difficult to build up a portfolio. And then third, often employers have biases themselves about what hiring someone ages 18 to 29 is like versus hiring someone in their 30s. About 3 years ago, we did research where we also looked at the hiring of different age brackets, right? And so what we found is that, you know, when employers look at youth, they're like, okay, well, do they have the right level of maturity? You know, are they taking this job seriously? And that gets in the way of them being, and they will also say, well, if I train you, then you're just going to leave a year later. And so is it worthwhile to train you, and so on? So that's what youth are confronting. And employers actually often prefer to hire someone in their 30s. We also looked at how they feel about hiring mid-careers. And again, we found a significant bias against mid-career candidates, where employers would say, you know, we don't think they're the right fit for us. We don't think that they're going to be capable in our environment. So this is all a long way of saying job candidates in their 30s have the best shot when it comes to the interview landscape. Those who are youth, you know, so in their like ages 18 to 29, and those past 40 face significant barriers to being employed above and beyond whether they have the skills for the job.
Dugu?
I would like to add here something. So young people are more agile in general. They are more able to respond quicker, better to the needs of the economy. So in that sense, they will switch in hiring practices would maybe slightly more benefit the young people. But then it creates a bit of risk for older people, as Mona mentioned, especially mid-career people. They are already having difficulties in the labor market to be stayed employed, given all the changes we are experiencing in jobs, in technologies we are using. So making the hiring process more flexible, more skill-based, might create a bigger burden for those people who have been in the labor market for decades and who have a more stagnating approach to learning new things. So this is not, of course, something we shouldn't be promoting, but this should be also something that we kept in our minds while talking about how we are changing our hiring practices. The impact across different social demographic groups might be quite heterogeneous and sometimes even unwanted, undesired ways of impact we can observe.
Let me also just add, and I'll just speak about mid-careers. You know, so in the survey that we had done about 3 years ago, about only 15% of employers said that they would consider a mid-career candidate for a role, that they would consider a mid-career candidate to be a fit. But then when we asked them, if you just happen to look at the mid-career people that you happen to have hired and how they are performing on the job, 86% of those companies said that they are performing as well, if not better, than their younger peers. And so this is the kind of data that's important to bring to bear, because there is perception and there is reality, and those two things are often not equal. And it is important to understand that data as we think about whom are we trying to hire, how do we best support different populations. I'll also say, because we cannot ever have a conversation now without speaking about AI, you know, there's also a big question about what is the impact of AI on the pattern of hiring by employers. You know, we are in some conversations where they're saying, you know what, we're going to need fewer entry-level roles, because we can have AI perform some of those tasks. Actually, we need more middle managers, right? Because they're going to quality assure things. And so I think there's also above and beyond age, there's just bigger questions about what does the pyramid look like for entry-level, mid-level roles in general across sectors.
Yeah, that's a big dilemma if this is going to happen, right?
That would give many of us pause, yes, Giuseppe, if that happens.
I mean, a lot of mid-career people might be enjoying this development, but...
Well, not if they are transitioning their careers and trying to get into an entry-level role.
No, I was saying another thing. I'm saying at some point we're going to run out of mid-career people, and we still have to... I mean, how do you get to the stage of the mid-career if you don't pass through the entry-level stage? And... It's just a little bit of a contradiction in terms, right?
I think that these are many of the issues that we need to grapple with as we think about what are the implications of AI on the labor market.
Absolutely. And we are going towards the end of this episode, but I still want to ask you one question, because we've been saying that this is the European Year of Skills, and it would be interesting for us to hear your own take about the developments in the European Union, about the skills policy over the past 10 years. And I actually remember that back in 2013, you came here at Bruegel, so exactly 10 years ago, to present a report on those issues. And it will be interesting to see a little bit how we compare to that presentation that you gave to Bruegel back then.
That's a very big question, Giuseppe.
a little final drop.
So I think I would say the following. I mean, one, The entire world is grappling with the education to employment bridge. And so I am heartened that Europe has declared this to be the year of skills. I would just say that, you know, this is a journey that spans well beyond a year. And so it's important to keep focus on this. Second, I would say, you know, there is greater awareness. We've been talking about skills-based hiring. There is greater awareness of skills-based hiring today than there was a decade ago, for sure. No question. Are all companies doing this? No. It's still a minority of companies. And so that to me is really the next big S-curve of what do we need to collectively not only be advocating for, but gathering data around. Because at the end of the day, employers do things for a reason. And so we need to be able to demonstrate that this type of hiring enables strong job performance, enables strong job retention, and also increases the equity of job opportunity. And then the third thing I would say, and this is more to green, but you know, the rise of green jobs is, you know, certainly different than it was a decade ago. And the more that the regulatory environment is moving in that direction, it actually creates a whole host of demand from employers for solar panel installers and retrofit advisors and heat pump installers in ways that were not true a decade ago. And so those are all really exciting things on the horizon.
Absolutely. And Hugo, before we leave, do you want to have a final reflection on the stuff we've been saying so far?
So maybe two things to add about why we care about skills-based hiring. There is ample evidence showing that actually skills are a better predictor of a good match in the job market than formal degrees are. So I think this alone should be shifting our focus from degrees to skills, but also it is cost effective. So it is cheaper for companies to hire based on skills than degrees. It takes less time. But of course, this means this necessitates a lot of changes and adjustments in the hiring pace. We need to redefine jobs. We need to first understand jobs, as Mona was suggesting, that they are doing this activity tracking. So companies should be doing it internally and really understand what skills are required for each job. Then we need to have a shared language. We need to know what we mean by a given skill. We need to have a skills taxonomy that everybody understands each other. But this is something I believe we have to do. It's not something we can avoid or walk around. This is what we are going to do eventually, rather sooner than later, I would say.
Thank you, Dugu and Mona. And unfortunately, we could discuss for much longer, but this is all the time we have for this episode. And I would like to remind our listeners that, as usual, you can read in open access all the analysis by our scholars on our website, www.bruegel.org. Thanks a lot, Mona and Hugo, once again, and thanks to our listeners for following us, and until next time, bye-bye.